Hello and welcome to the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast. I am your hostess, Natalie Ross, and our guest this week is Theo Wersching, who is an astrologer with maybe a different perspective than what you are used to. And today we get into a little bit of background on astrology, and we also dive into the asteroid Ceres and how Ceres placement in your chart can give you information about how you were programmed essentially as a child to take care of yourself based on your mother's habits. So this is a super interesting conversation, and I have personally worked with Thea and I love her work. So I'm really excited to bring her to you today. Before we get started, I just want to thank everyone who's a Patreon supporter. If you have been nourished by this show, you can give us $1, $5, $10, or more per month over at dreamfreedombeauty.com/Patreon. Go check it out and help us keep the show going. And for the first time in almost a year and a half, I am opening up books for one-to-one consultation sessions with me. That's right, you can get on a call with me and I can help you move through whatever problems you're struggling with right now with regards to your business, with regards to your self-care or personal problems, whatever. I've had so many different kinds of problems come through and I will help you using my divine connection, my intuition and speaking with your guides and also with my extensive background with analytical and critical thinking and business building. So I'd love to help you. You can find more information and book a call at dreamfreedombeauty.com/sessions. That's dreamfreedombeauty.com/sessions to learn more about these one-to-one calls. I'm so excited to get to know you all better and help you out, help you solve your biggest problems right now. So I'll see you there. Hi, Thea. Welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Totally. I am so excited to have you here because we have gone through Influence and Thrill together with Carolyn Elliott in the past year. And also, I've interviewed you on Self-Care Club, and I've also gotten 2 readings with you. So I'm super stoked to get to dive deep with you today and share this conversation with all the listeners.
Me too. And I have no idea where it's going to take us. I'm so excited to find out.
Where will it go? So before we get started, do you want to do an invocation for us?
Yes, I would love to.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask the Roman goddess Ceres to be present for our interview and contain the space for your listeners. So Ceres is an ancient grain goddess, but she's also the name of a planet that was discovered between Mars and Jupiter that I work with a lot and I imagine we'll talk about today. And Ceres has a very similar background to the ancient Greek goddess Demeter. And both of these ancient goddesses are primarily concerned with rhythm and with the cycles of the earth. So most of us know the Demeter Persephone story, which was used to explain why there's some fertile months and some barren months in the year. And so today I call on Ceres to help everyone in your audience, your listeners, to connect to the idea of rhythm in their life. And I think when a lot of us think about rhythm, we think about maybe how we're not doing it right or we're doing something wrong, like, oh, I really have to get into sync with this or that. But I'm asking Ceres to help us forget about that idea and instead to really connect to our own very unique, very personal rhythm, the way that we do life. And in my experience working with this planet, this is something we learned from our mother. And so this is also a way of honoring our ancestry, right? A mother in the early years of our life imprints something on us about how to move through this world. And so someone's rhythm, you know, one person's rhythm might be very, very regular. Another person's rhythm might be really stop, start. Someone might have a slow rhythm. Another person could have a really fast, punchy rhythm. And so I want us to forget about the idea that we need to align ourselves with some kind of rhythm outside our body. But instead, I'm asking Ceres to help us all connect to our own personal ingrained sense of rhythm and to be in acceptance with ourselves.
Okay, thank you, Thea, for that. And let's jump into talking a little bit about your philosophy around astrology, because I know that you like to have the take that we are co-creating with the planets. We aren't necessarily at the mercy of the planets, even though it might sometimes feel like that. So do you want to just unpack that a little bit for us and share your astrological approach with us?
Yes, I will do my best. So I think that's such an important point, and it's something that really bums me out when people are kind of casually into astrology and they'll approach me and say, Saturn's kicking my ass or Pluto's crushing me or something, because I have more the sense that, I mean, honestly, I really think that all magic and all occultism comes from the planets, and that, you know, originally, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago. And I think they all have coherent personalities and kind of a plan for us, right? They want something from us. They want some kind of homage. So I think of it more like that, you know, like developing a relationship to Saturn, because Saturn wants you to work. He wants you to work hard at something. And so when something inconvenient or unpleasant happens and we might really, really disapprove of it, when we can kind of back up and look at our lives more holistically, like, okay, why did I have to have an injury at that time in my life, right? Why did I have to break my leg and I had to stop all my activities and work was a pain in the ass and all these other things? Maybe that was something you needed to experience at that time to evolve in a particular area of your life, you know? And so if you're able to cultivate that attitude, which I think is challenging for all of us, because things are always happening that we disapprove of or that are inconvenient or that go against our plan, you can develop much more a sense of peace and a feeling that it's all meant, you know, it's all meant to be. So I struggle with that myself, you know, and fortunately I do this job. I mean, it's probably the reason I do this job because I was in so much anger and disapproval of how things were going in my life or why certain things had happened to me, that I really had to learn this perspective. So, yeah. And what else? What else do you want to know? I could go off on that tangent for a
while. Well, it makes me think of, it's such a great portal into shadow work, because when you think that you're just having something done to you, you're in such a victim mode. And that sure. includes your, anyone who thinks a planet is doing something to them puts them at the mercy of the planet and they're a victim to it. And it's completely disempowering. So, I like your approach because it's actually super empowering and it's more about having a relationship with this being.
Yeah. That's such an important perspective, and just kind of jumping on that, I feel like if I can introduce this idea to someone, if they're like, everything sucks, and I'm like, well, you're having a Pluto transit, right? You're participating in this event with Pluto. They can take more ownership of what's happening to them, right? So they're not this hapless victim. So I always like to present it as a choice of you can work with the energy, or you can fight it really hard and it's going to suck worse if you are in so much resistance. But I mean, Saturn transits make a great example for that, because when Saturn's hanging around, it won't be fun. I mean, that's a pretty safe bet to say, you know, it's probably not going to be very fun when Saturn's hanging around. And
are you speaking to the infamous Saturn return in this?
Well, that is a prime example, right? That's a classic Saturn time. But, you know, Saturn can do all sorts of stuff in your chart. It can oppose your sun, which is awkward, and conjunct your moon. And it can just beat you up all the time, you know, in different ways. So, but yeah, I mean, the Saturn return is kind of the classic. And weirdly that you even brought that up, because my Saturn return was so much fun. So I have like a very... a different perspective on a lot of things, right? Like, I think if you're really nailing Saturn, if you're doing it really well and you're giving him what he wants and you're like working really hard and doing your Saturn, it could be fun. There's no guarantee that it's going to be horrible. So I don't really have a black and white sense of like some planets are good and some are bad, you know?
Right. And I think, you know, something that I talk about on the show a lot is the like high expression and low expression of something. It's very similar in tarot with, you know, some people read reverse cards and some people don't. And they just read it as like the high expression of this card and the low expression. And, you know, I think that the idea of Saturn return is so vilified in our spiritual communities because probably people aren't even giving attention to the potential for that high expression of a Saturn return and for the potential for it to be a really evolutionary time in a positive way without having to be a struggle or full of like loss and pain.
Oh, you are so right. I kind of feel like you're quoting me also because in my readings, I always talk about high and low expression, right?
So awesome.
Every event is an existential opportunity. You get to respond to it however you want. You can be really angry and resentful and put your head in the sand, or you can just kind of say, well, this is happening right now. So I'm going to show up as much and as well as I possibly can. And I kind of love that idea applied to tarot. You know, that's another thing that I dabble with. But astrology is definitely my main gig. So I'm kind of like, ooh, tarot, like finding the high and low expression there. I love that. Mm-hmm. My sense with Saturn return was kind of interesting. I think it's so weird that this planet has such a bad reputation because my sense as a counseling astrologer is that Uranus transits are way more disruptive and painful and devastating. And I experience this all the time when I talk to people and I'm like, why is Saturn the bad guy? He's great, right? He gives us this sense of structure. And so that's basically what's trying to happen at the Saturn return, right? You're erecting a structure for the next 30 years of your life. Like what is going to be strong and stalwart about you and kind of sustain you over the next 30-year cycle. So it's great. We can't do anything without a structure, right? And I always think about trees when I think about Saturn because Saturn has rulership over trees. I mean, they're old, they're hard, they live for a long time, right? They give us a sense of stability. I don't know if I'm
structured.
Right. So it's like we hear structure and we're kind of like, no, that's terrible. But actually, I mean, structure is so relevant to everything and especially relationships, right? It's like people are really curious, like, oh, what's my Venus doing or what's my Mars doing? And I'm like, you know, you want to last with this person more than 6 months, like see what your Saturn contacts are. It's super important.
So it sounds like you, well, you know, I just know this. We haven't talked about this here in this episode yet, but that you really like to deal more with the outer planets than the inner planet. So it's kind of funny that you're like, oh, why would you bother with the Venus right now? Look at Saturn. And are all of the outer planets kind of slower moving than the inner planets? And also, can you give us an outline of what are the outer planets?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So generally, when I'm doing a search for like what's coming in the next year, if someone wants to know about that, I'll look at Jupiter, which has about a 12-year orbit. And I'll look at Saturn, which has closer to a, you know, 29, 30-year orbit. And then I'll look at Uranus, which has an 84-year orbit. And I will look at Neptune and Pluto, which both have orbits in excess of 100 years.
Wow.
So
cool.
And so those planets are super slow moving. So that's what I tend to pay attention to. And then there's another, I know it's a super techie, but there's another technique you can use called progression. And then that will actually give me information about the fast moving planets, which I would call Sun, Moon, Mercury, Venus, and Mars. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And that's, you know, for any science nerds out there, it's that astrology belt that, the asteroid belt. I would wear an astrology belt. Yeah. The asteroid belt that separates those inner and outer planets, right?
Yeah.
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 Super cool. I mean,
so it's interesting we started with Ceres because she's kind of that pivotal energy, in the asteroid belt. So,
yeah. You know, this is just making me feel super psychedelic because whenever I think about, wow, we are, it's like Carl Sagan, like the little blue dot, like we really are sitting on this tiny planet in this huge, vast universe. And there's all these other planets orbiting around us. Wow. It's just really blowing my mind in this moment.
And that's what's so fun about this work for me because, again, I get so caught up in the things that are happening to me and in my world. And if I can just back up a little bit, and you just see how incredible it is, right? And especially when you get the chance to see how planets orchestrate things over time in your life, it's really mind-blowing. I mean, it's so epic. And I'll just share something with you that's really been blowing my mind lately.
Please, always.
So I lived in Eugene, Oregon for a number of years, and there's an astrologer up there named Demetra George who has worked a lot with the asteroid belt and Ceres. And so she broke a lot of this material with a feminist perspective. And she also has this book called Finding Our Way Through the Dark. And she talks about the progressed moon cycle. And this is not something I introduce to clients a lot just because I feel like it's yet another way of predicting something. And I feel like people get kind of confused. And so I'm like, well, I don't want to add too much information, but I might actually do a special workshop on it. Cause basically what it is. So we were talking a little bit about the moon, I think, and how the moon moves so quickly, right? Kind of zips around the chart in a month, 29 days ish. There's different ways to calculate that. But anyway.
And by that, you mean that the moon goes through every single sign?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool.
So there's actually like two different moon cycles. So there's like when the moon returns to zero Aries, let's say, or when the moon returns to the phase it was in. Mm-hmm. And one is 27 days and change and one is 29 days and change. And so we usually just say 28 days.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm gonna try not to be that technical, but so what you can do is actually track the movement of moon phases in your own life, which is just so wowifying to me. It's so cool. And it's about a 30-year cycle. It just winds up being that. And so you can find when you've had a full moon in the last 30 years of your life and what that phase was like. And you can find when you've had a new moon and then all the phases in between. And it's just been pretty dramatic to go back and look at that recently. And I think it's something that I looked at, 10 years ago, 15 years ago or something, and just haven't really picked it up again. But now I have a lot more material, a lot more data to kind of plug into that cycle and see how it's impacted my life. And I think in my full moon phase, it was just crazy. It was like a 4-year phase. So in my full moon phase, I got engaged. I was ordained as a priestess. I got my PhD. I got married and I got my first professor job. I got pregnant and gave birth to a child. I was like, wow, that is a lot to happen in 4 years. Is kind of a big full moon bloom, like all that energy building up. And then in the phase that happens after that, and because it's waning, now you can look at the waning energy in your life. And so that's sort of where I'm at right now. There's sort of a crisis in consciousness. And that happened to me as well, right? I had these abuse memories surface. And so reality looked really different. I couldn't really just live for myself anymore. And so there's kind of a move out into a more humanitarian perspective, which is also what's been going on. So I made that transition from, I'll be like high on ego doing the college professor thing to, I just really want to help people. I want to connect with people. I want to share what I've learned about healing with others. So it's been just super exciting. And so I've taken some clients that I work with a lot and asked them like, hey, can we just look at your moon cycles for fun and see what comes up? And it's pretty intense and exciting. So yeah, it's fun when like I can experience that excitement again, because you know, some things are so accustomed to me if we're talking about Saturn or Uranus or, you know, these planets I work with all the time. I'm not going to get a surprise.
It's like old hat.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm like, the moon.
Okay. So at first I was super confused what you're talking about. I'm like, a 30-year cycle for your moon phase of your life. So can you break this down for us a little bit about what you mean? Because it makes total sense. I can think of it in one way, but show, like, where does it start? Like, how do we find out where our own 30-year moon phase cycle begins?
So I am going to recommend Demetra's book. I don't know if it's still in print, but Demetra George, the wonderful feminist astrologer, she has a book called Finding Our Way Through the Dark, and she gives you a workbook. And so you figure out what moon phase was happening when you were born. And so that's the other cool thing, too, we're all kind of locked into a particular moon phase. So you can use her book to figure that out. You know, were you born at the new moon? And if you were born at the new moon, were you born in a waning moon or a waxing moon? Because it's very different as far as personality. And then still using that book, you can kind of plot the phases that happen after that. And so that would be my best resource. And the reason, okay, I'll explain progressions because it's basically what it is. So you know how the moon goes around the signs in 28 days, passes through the ecliptic in 28 days?
Right. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
In progress technique, you take every day that passes after the day that you were born and turn it into a year.
This is like what? Okay, just keep going. I'm just going to stick with you here.
I know, and it's funny because my teacher is like, it's weird that it even works. Like, why does this work? But progressions work. They're really intense. And because the sun, so basically like what moon phase is, it has to do with the moon's relationship to the sun. Because the sun keeps moving instead of a 28-year cycle, like would make sense, right? It's kind of more like a 32-year cycle, which is confusing, but it's because the sun keeps moving too, right? So you're plotting the relationship between sun and moon by progression. And that's the thing. It's like, I don't tend to talk about it because it sounds so complicated and confusing.
Right. It feels like one of those. Yeah. It sounds like one of those things that would be really useful to like, see. So what I think you're saying here is you say, okay, like for instance, I was born on a waning crescent 2 days before a new moon. So then we would progress it by saying, okay, for the next year, the first year of my life would be like a waning crescent, and the second year would be waning crescent, and then the third year would be a new moon year, essentially. Yeah. But there's more nuance in it because of the way orbits shift with us, with the sun, the earth, and the moon all flying through space over time.
Yeah, so you were born within a couple days of the new moon, but waning, right?
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so then at a certain point in your childhood, you're going to have a new moon. Mm-hmm. And then, so we could just kind of fudge some math, right?
Right.
Say maybe, I don't know, at age 18, maybe you had a full moon cycle.
Cool.
That's kind of how I would guesstimate it. Yeah, but it's something we could do for fun because you're so much fun. And it's just pretty incredible to see how powerful the cycles are. Again, just kind of slowing everything down over years versus just like the quickness of a moon transit.
Okay. So I think this really speaks to something that you have a real keen eye on too, which is so different from, you know, the vast majority of astrologers, which is, what are the slower events happening? Because we're such a like fast paced now society, like faster go. And you're like, hey, wait, folks, there's these long term trends. And even from this moon, which flies through every sign over 1 month, you're like, wait, there's a longer way that the moon phase is affecting your life. Like this, it looks like you're really looking at these long-term cycles and effects of things.
Right. And I mean, I kind of like where you're going with this question because I think a lot of people turn to astrology because they have anxiety about the future, which we all do, right? That's a natural thing to be concerned about. And that's certainly why I was drawn to this, right? I always felt confused and stuck and unsure about
what
I was
like, what do I do?
But I mean, what I've noticed is that, you know, when I try to use astrology to take away anxiety, it doesn't really lend itself to that. I think we kind of wish that it would work that way. But it's actually more of that spiritual perspective, right? So I kind of feel like people come to an astrologer expecting that everything will be laid out for them. They'll get a bunch of information, like telling them what's going to happen in the next year. But if you've ever had a reading like that, it's kind of profoundly uncomfortable. Like if people are taking away your choice and saying, yeah, you know, in a couple months you should quit your job and, you know, travel to Costa Rica. And after that, you're going to meet your soulmate. And it's sort of like jarring or off-putting to receive information like that, right?
So it really takes you out of your flow too, because you're just thinking of that future moment of like, oh, is this the soulmate? Is that the soulmate? Like,
yeah. And so I think kind of coming back to that anxiety thing, it's like, if you approach this as a co-creation, it's sort of like what planetary energies are going to be hanging out in the coming year and what kind of relationship could we forge? You know, so if Mars is going to be hanging out, well, you could spend that time being really angry, being really frustrated, making enemies, I don't know, engaging in self-defeating behavior or even violence. Or you could activate that energy to figure out, where could I go be a warrior in my life? You know, where do I really need to stand up for something or someone or stand up for myself and set boundaries, you know, or how do I need to engage with masculine energy? Right. And so in that sense, it doesn't really take away the anxiety of what's going to happen. You know, it's like I can never take that away from anyone. I wish that I could. But I mean, I actually don't wish that I could, because I think it's so fun. I mean, life is so fun that we can always be surprised. And even though I have all these resources at my fingertips, I never expect to know everything that's going to happen, nor would I want to.
Right. Then why would you? Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so it's always like, how is Pluto going to surprise me? How is Mars going to surprise me? Like, how is this totally amazing interaction between this planetary energy and me? How are we going to come together? And that's what winds up being so fulfilling about following the cycles.
Yeah, cool. And, you know, if say, for instance, this example of going to an astrologer and looking at the next year, it could be so helpful, like how you outlined with Mars, instead of being like, oh, you know, I feel like so often people do want to just say the bad things, but really when you give these different sides of it, the high and low expression of it, it's like, okay, if you can be aware of, if you find yourself having an unusually high number of conflicts, then you can be like, oh yeah, Mars is in this certain place. And I remember my opportunity in this moment is to create a better boundary. And that's so empowering. And so
right. It's like, instead of feeling like outside stuff is attacking me, it's like, oh, I own this. This is my stuff. And I can kind of get with it or not. And the other thing that's useful to remember is that I think these events, which are always happening, it's kind of like learning to ride a bike. If you actually learn how to ride the bike and you don't bomb the transit or something, you know, just, you know, spend it drinking or something, then you gain something. You learn a Mars lesson that you no longer have to learn after that. So you can kind of graduate to the next class.
Cool.
Right? Like maybe Mars level one is how not to punch someone or something when you're like 8 years old or 12 years old. Like, learn to resolve your problems differently, right? Don't resort to violence. But if you keep meeting the Mars challenge, then it doesn't come back around. Like you're not stuck in the same class, you know, and then you can just add that to your repertoire of life skills and learn ever more sophisticated ways of being a warrior.
Oh, cool. I like that. Okay. Yeah. So this is all making me think about, I'm just like, wow. Okay. There's so many planets and we're all in deep relationship with each of them at every moment, whether we like it or not. Like we're here in this universe together. This is how it is. And it almost feels overwhelming at first to think about like, wow, I'm already in these relationships. This feels like a lot of relationships to maintain or uphold or like, you know, like how do you deal with that? I mean, I know you love astrology, but do you feel that or do you just focus on like one thing at a time? How do you juggle all of these planetary family members?
Ooh, I love that question. I mean, one part of me wants to answer that. I have altars all over the house. And so it's always just been a joke with my friends and like my husband, like, you know, are you going to turn this into an altar? Like, here's some uncovered space in the house.
And so, and the answer is yes.
But another thing I say a lot in readings is that it's okay to compartmentalize. And for some people, that's actually a really healthy response to the chart that they have. And so if you have two really different energies emphasized in your chart, like let's say you've got a really strong Saturn energy and you also have a really strong Uranus energy, and maybe they're square, you know, maybe they're kind of like actively in conflict in your chart, I think it's okay to compartmentalize and say like, okay, I'm doing the Saturn thing right now. I'm giving Saturn his due. I'm doing something that makes me a responsible person with a leadership role in the community or something. And then Uranus is more rebellious and destructive, right? And then it's okay to make that separate space in your life for that energy as well. You know, are you protesting? You know, is there a place where you're really actively political? And those two parts of you might not get along. That might be a lifelong journey to try to bring them together. So I don't know if that makes sense, but I think culturally too, it's kind of hard for us to, maybe not for all of us, but I think we like to put people into neat little boxes.
Yeah.
And so if someone is showing these two different sides, like, wait a minute, you've got a 9-to-5 job and you work for the man. And then also on the weekend, you're like protesting and you're so political and like, I don't get it. Who are you? So kind of just like accepting the fact that we're all these really complex beings and we might have to serve a couple different masters at the same time is another thing that astrology has been really helpful with for me.
Cool. I like that, you know, that just getting into the paradoxical nature of existence there. So, and I hear you saying that, oh, you don't have to necessarily always be hanging out with every single planet all the time. Maybe there's phases of your life where you're hanging out more with Venus, and then other times you're hanging out more with Jupiter and getting to know each other, and then maybe you can just check in and have a phone call with Venus and like, you know, it's yeah. kind of like real life relationships where, you know, sometimes, you know, you meet someone and you go deep and then things change and
I love that. You know, I think in many ways you've totally nailed it. And so, you know, it's kind of a mix. So it's like, let's say there's a year where, you're going to have to be hanging out with Saturn a lot. Saturn's asking something from you. You're having a Saturn return. So you have to solidify. You have to mature, right? You have to do all that adulting kind of stuff. But remember, it's like, if you learn the lesson, then it's like learning to ride a bike. It's like, once you have learned to ride the bike, you don't have to keep learning it. And so I think kind of once you make that connection to these different facets of yourself, you're not always having to expend a lot of energy. So I'll just use myself as an example. I have a super strong Mercury, like turbocharged Mercury. It's really like amped up in my chart. And so I was an English major and I went on to get an English PhD. So it's like in many ways, this whole capacity for language and communication. I've sort of done it. It's not like I won't ever use Mercury again or won't have to like spend more time with Mercury in the future. It's just that I've really focused a lot of time on that in my life. And so when Mercury stuff comes up, it just, I don't know. I don't get a lot of Mercury challenges. I guess that's how I'd put it. So even Mercury retrogrades are kind of breezy for me, which is weird to say, but I don't know. That's like a working theory. I'm not sure if I can back that up, but like maybe because I'm so mercurial and serve Mercury all the time, he's really kind to me during his retrograde phase. I don't know.
Right. And you went so deep. So Mercury rules communications and language and all that. So you went so deep and, you know, deep enough to get a PhD that relates to that. So like, you're like, okay, I'm going to give you your due. And maybe that was it. You know, who knows? To be determined for the rest of your life.
I don't know. That's an interesting one too. There's more I could say, but again, I'm getting so super technical. So that, you know, that's a challenge with being an astrologer, because I think there's kind of like internet astrology, which I'm sort of skeptical of a lot of it and really cautious about it. And when you are so trained with all this technical stuff, then you can kind of lose your audience or be talking over people's heads. And so it's this balance that is hard to maintain. Anyway.
I know. It's it's like, you know, so it's like not too, I don't want to say too much, but it's like so much that you know, people probably really like the reason this day-to-day astrology is so popular is just because it's digestible and easy to understand. And, you know, even if it's not necessarily serving as powerful of a purpose as something as looking at these longer transits and looking at these very long-term cycles and powers. So, you know, I do want to change directions here and talk about Ceres, because Ceres is that asteroid that you have been studying and kind of doing, you know, working research about like what influence and impact does Ceres really have on someone's life based on where it is in their chart, and how can people look at that and use that information to really heal some of their bad habits and also impart some positive healing habits and good habits of self-care and like get into the daily habits and rituals. So do you want to just start with like what piqued your interest in Ceres in the first place? Because it's totally not a popular thing that's being talked about at all.
No, it's not at all. So thank you for bringing up this question, because I love how we've connected on this topic as well, because I really feel like the work that you're doing in the world is so much about this planet as well.
Right. And since you have been there so deep in my chart, you know how huge of an impact Ceres has on me.
I mean, just the whole idea of self-care, right? And you bring people to consciousness about that. I mean, I think that's what this planet is. So again, Demetra George, you know, was a huge influence on me getting to meet her in Oregon. And she had written some on this planet. But I think people were really kind of stuck on the myth as far as the planet, which is Demeter and Persephone being kidnapped and the cycles. And so people were kind of looking at charts to see if you'd been kidnapped or something. Like if your Ceres was really strong, like this would be a theme in your life. And I was kind of sitting with it going, okay, but men have this in their chart too, right? Just like men have the moon or men have Venus. So we can't just make this like a story about women and, you know, maybe rape, which is also part of the Demeter myth. And I just kind of want, I don't know, I was just really drawn to it, even though it doesn't have this like super sexy appeal, I guess, like Venus or something. And it's also the biggest rock out in the asteroid belt. And what happened in the cultural reception of the planet is that when Pluto was demoted in 2006, Ceres was briefly promoted to planet.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So it was like, oh, well, if we like, you know, redraw the lines here of what a planet is, like Pluto's kicked out, but oh, Ceres is a planet. And then
because is Ceres bigger than Pluto?
It's not. It's actually smaller, but they are, you know, relative in size, I guess.
Okay. And, okay. I guess we won't go there right now.
Yeah, and Ceres actually has the majority is the right term, right? So she's got more mass than anything else in the asteroid belt, right? Okay. So she's the biggest thing out there. And so when the astronomers were kind of recalibrating what a planet is, they're like, well, she didn't clear her orbit of debris, meaning her orbit is filled with asteroids, right? And so that's why she's not a planet. And just as far as how that imagery kind of locked into maybe a feminist interpretation of what the planet was, I thought that was so fascinating. Like, oh, she's kind of containing all these other energies. Like, she's not kicking them out, right? It isn't about ego. It's sort of about containing the whole or containing the group. So I was intrigued by that. And then also kind of like her dubious status. Is she a planet? Is she not? So that was intriguing. And then this also started because I feel like we sort of beat up on Virgo energy a lot. And
perfectionist, right?
Yeah, like sixth house energy is the same. So Virgo's the sixth sign. Sixth house in astrology is similar. So the sense of what it is to be a steward is kind of what Virgo energy is. And we're like, oh, yuck, so boring, blah. And my sense is that all the astrological archetypes are really sacred, you know, so we can understand how an Aries warrior is sacred, or a Gemini psychopomps is sacred, or, you know, we can kind of find a place for all these energies. But the Virgo grain goddess doesn't seem to hold that place anymore. And I just found that I wasn't really using Mercury, which is considered the ruler of Virgo. I wasn't really looking to Mercury to answer Virgo questions. So that's how I got really opened up to, like, well, Ceres, the grain goddess, is kind of the natural ruler of Virgo, which does seem to work. So, yeah, and then just kind of tapping into what's missing in our culture, like why we would have this very negative relationship to the idea of self-care and Virgo thing. So it's basically what the sixth house is and what Virgo is care of health, care of the body, you know, daily maintenance, the gardener, that kind of thing. And I think the reason there are these big questions now in the culture of like, what is self-care and how do we mm-hmm. self-care is because we're so out of step with the earth and with natural cycles, right? Like, we have no sense of a natural cycle of a plant. Like, when is that fruit going to be in season? Like, we can have it all year round because...
Right. You can walk into the grocery store.
Exactly. So, so I feel like there's just like this big disconnect between what we eat and how that ties us to the land. And so I think Ceres is a way that can kind of open up that discussion with the client of why is your self-care not feeling satisfying or why is it not working and how to move more in step with that as far as actually connecting to the planet that we live in and live on and find something meaningful in that. So it's kind of all around the place, but it's a lot of material.
I know, it's interesting. And I love how this Ceres as the goddess of the grain and this harvest mm-hmm. element is so earth connected and so related to how we eat. And it really is a piece that we've, unless someone is very adamant about understanding where food comes from, we, you know, right. on the whole, our society doesn't really pay attention to where food comes from or when right. something's ripe, as you say. And that is part of this. That's like, I feel like one symptom of this huge disconnect that we have with the earth overall, which really, you know, is like, that's why the earth is such an important part of returning to self-care, is because the earth is like, hey, you are an earthling here. And that means that you're going to be fed by the cycles, these natural cycles that earth goes through. So can you connect the dots some more about how Ceres informs, helps us remember those important aspects of care that are so connected with the earth.
Yes, I love how you put it. So much I want to say. Okay, so there's kind of an interesting technique in astrology. Like for thousands of years, we just had these seven planets that we could see, and it stopped with Saturn. And as we started to add new ones, like Pluto, Uranus, Neptune, astrologers were looking at like, well, what was happening at that time that the planet was discovered? And so Ceres was discovered a little bit over 200 years ago. But if you think about that time bracket, I mean, that's really when the Industrial Revolution had happened and people were leaving farms and moving to cities. And we have the beginning of something like industrial farming.
Yeah.
And so the esoteric wisdom here would be that, okay, this planet shows up for us when we really need to come to consciousness about something. You know?
Wow. Wait, I'm just so struck by how she was discovered around the time when people were moving away from that farm life and into the Industrial Revolution. It was just kind of getting going.
And all these dots are connected. This is the beginning of pollution too, right? When we have the beginning of factories, right? And coal mining and just all this stuff. It's like, why are people having to now just labor in factories, and then there's this toxic waste, which is impacting the earth. And okay. So as far as cycles, the ancient myth that this comes from, the Demeter myth, is used to explain those cycles, right? So Persephone, because she made this kind of mistake, I guess, when she was in the underworld and she ate some seeds, she ate some pomegranate seeds. She now has to split her time between being in the underworld and being with her mother. And so when she's with her mother, we have the fertile world. And then when she's with Pluto, we have the barren months. We have winter. And so that's kind of how the cycles connect. And I think it's interesting that she also has she has almost a 4-year orbit, not quite 4 years, but I think that's really interesting too, because you know, we could think of 4 as being the number of the seasons. And so I tend to think of Ceres as having to do with those rhythms in our life. You know, Demeter and Ceres, both these ancient goddesses that are connected, were about those earthly rhythms. So I think it's just really like what I've noticed, and this comes from my background of, you know, having eating disorders when I was a pretty young teen and having to do a lot of healing around food, because the food that I was fed growing up was complete crap. Like my mom would buy a bag of puppies. She'd get the like 5 sandwiches for $5 deal or whatever it was. And then she would just like leave them on the counter for a week. I mean, that was how we ate. Wow. Like she would refrigerate them. I don't think it mattered because they had so many chemicals in them. And we would take these trips to the Hostess outlet store, you know, like Hostess cupcakes, and then we just fill up this huge freezer we had, and that was kind of what I lived on, right? So I didn't really wind grow up eating real food. And so I've noticed that because we've had a couple generations like that now, everyone is in so much anxiety about what to eat and how to eat, and it's so confusing and it's so overwhelming and it feels like there are so many choices, when in reality, it's actually super simple, right? So it's interesting that we've been so disconnected from how natural and simple it is to feed ourselves by maybe keeping a garden or having chickens and eating eggs or something like that. We've kind of made it super complex and mysterious. And then because it has been so mystified, right? Like taken away from us. It's like, we have to go to a grocery store and make choices and be on a budget and cook something. And
not only that, but people also create these super complex systems about how we should be eating in certain ratios of fats to carbs, to proteins, etc.
Right. And not to discount all that wonderful work. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of wonderful stuff you can gain from researching, right, combining fats and proteins and all that stuff, you know. But kind of taking a different perspective here and just zooming out, I think that we're disconnected from the simplicity of it. And so we don't feel gratitude. We feel anxiety. So even if we're on some super sophisticated diet and someone's telling us how to eat, we might still have that question, right? It's like, could I be doing it better? Like there's always a sort of anxiety, like something's missing.
Which would make me think of that sort of negative Virgo association.
Right. And it's interesting because Virgo is a sharp sign and a hard sign. And so I like that this goddess, Ceres Demeter, is basically a destroyer goddess. She was like, you know what? I'm pulling the plug on life on Earth. You're not respecting me. So nothing's going to grow. So I think that's kind of ominous, but it's consistent with her being kind of a dark goddess and her having this really intense grief when her daughter is kidnapped. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know where she is, you know, the intensity of that grief and that loss. And then her rage when she realizes she's been betrayed and no one's telling her what happened to her daughter. So I think just kind of coming back to, you know, what people might get out of the reading, just the idea of thinking about, I mean, it sounds strange to say, but like, what is the esoteric purpose of food?
Love it. And I think tell us. Actually,
what was that?
I said, I love it. Tell us.
I think it's to feel that connection to the earth, you know? And so if on a daily basis, just for at least one meal, you know, for one meal a day, if you ate that meal and you really allowed yourself to be conscious when eating that meal and feel gratitude for, I don't know, the collard greens that you're eating, you know, have some sense of like, oh, maybe I didn't grow it in my garden, but this came from the earth. This is food from the earth, and have gratitude for the eggs or the meat or whatever. And you feel that sense of how the earth takes care of you. I honestly just think that that's why we're in so much anxiety in general in the Western world, because that whole consciousness has just been deleted from our lives. Like, we're not walking barefoot. We're not spending time outside. We're not attuned to any earthly cycles. And
well,
so I feel
like, would say that a lot of my listeners are, but on the general, our right. society. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, definitely. Like, I would expect this to be a community where people really vibrate to this kind of information.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think, like, people are thinking that their food problem can be solved by a superfood or a special diet.
Totally.
And that, like, a lot of the emotional work that might have to happen behind that is just feeling the sense that we're taken care of. And I think that we just, as a society, don't spend a lot of time feeling like the earth takes care of us. And if we felt that, like, if we actually allowed ourselves to feel how the earth provides for 7 billion humans, what would then change in our attitude toward the earth? You know what I mean?
I just want to pause here and let that sink in for people.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a big, awesome question. Because, you know, even with this very earth conscious, like, bare feet on the ground, meditating mm-hmm. earth, you know, garden growing group we've got here, mm-hmm. that's a really good point. Like, that feeling of it, like, are you allowing yourself to feel provided for by the earth? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then, is there more you want to go on that? Because I know this connects the dots further into another aspect of this, but before I go there, I just want to allow you to share anything more about this. We're going to stay in series here, but I know where the dots go, so.
So oh, sure. I can talk about more dots. So when I decided I wanted to explore this, I got a statue of Demeter from Greece, and I made a Ceres altar, and I was like, okay, I want to just hear what the goddess has to say. And she showed me an image of breastfeeding, and it was so profound. So just in that one image, I learned so much. And so because I have a young child, and I attempted to breastfeed, not very successfully, but I managed it for a while. And so having had that kind of lived experience, so like when you have a very, very young child, there's this idea of the fourth trimester where you kind of have to like replicate womb living in the first 3 months of a baby's life, because that's really what they're used to. And so in that really sensitive time, mother is just everything. You know, mother is food, mother is warmth, mother is rhythm. And so where I also go in this reading, so this is where it starts getting fun, you know, instead of just conceptual, it's like Ceres and the signs will show you what kind of mama you had, and therefore what type of rhythm you inherited and learned from mom. And so this material has just been so wild to discuss with people. It's been so much fun because everyone has a very, very unique relationship to food. Like, I've never been bored and no one's ever told me the same story. So that's kind of another sign for me that I'm onto something, because when I was playing around with this planet and like, what does it mean? I'm like, food, like, that's boring. Like, what, you know, nothing part of life, right? But if you actually start talking to people about food, people have like such deep issues with food and desires and hungers and like habits, and it's just such rich materials. I'm like, oh, it makes sense that a whole planet would be in charge of this because there's so much there. And so a lot of that relationship to food we learned from mom in those early years of childhood.
Right. You know, and like not just like what to eat, but like how was your hunger addressed and all these different things, right?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So, whew, yeah. And I'm trying to think of, you know, examples I could use that aren't too personal to people, because I just hear such deep and intimate stories. And so if there was a divorce or something that happened in the first 5 years of a child's life, you know, that's going to affect mom's rhythm. Right? There might be a separation or a trauma or something in mom's energy. And then you, as the young child who's learning that rhythm, you're going to inherit some kind of the rhythm of separation or shock, right? That might be part of how you do life. And I think I might have shared this with you when we did the reading, but for me, it was really interesting to think about, because I have Ceres in a fire sign, and the rest of my chart is not fiery at all, really. And my mom was an artist. And so it just really connected some dots for me in that, you know, I kind of wish I could go through my life more methodically, like more organized, like earthy and airy, like I am, right? Be kind of like more dry and organized. But I'm always chasing after like artistic projects. And I have Ceres and Leo. And that was my mom's rhythm. She was always like looking to be inspired by visual things and like cutting stuff out of magazines and putting it in her idea box. And she would go to craft fairs when I was a child and sell her wares and stuff. And I feel that rhythm in me. So it has been really interesting. I did a chart for someone recently whose mom always had the TV on. That was kind of like a hallmark of mom, right? Mm. So it's interesting to think about that, right? It's like, oh, that's what you learn as a young child, is like, there's always some distraction. I can never be totally present, right? I'm always having to split my focus with this other loud, annoying thing. And you can see how that would become a rhythm in someone's life, right? That's like, oh, this is how you do life. You always have to like balance who you are and what you want with this buzzing stuff that doesn't really matter, right?
Right. So, just and you never get someone's complete attention.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's been fascinating to see how that has been downloaded in people. And then, of course, there's always the opportunity to kind of tune to a higher channel. There's the high road and the low road, right? So mom's energy might have been kind of low, and there might be some trauma written into the story, but then you can always take that same pattern and make it work for you.
So for instance, like with the TV always on, how would you make that pattern work for you?
Well, that was interesting because it was a 12th house Ceres placement. And so 12th house has a lot to do with addiction and being checked out. And so with this woman, I kind of went through the checklist of how people check out. You know, it's like alcohol, drugs, food. And we kind of weren't getting anywhere. And she was like, oh, she always has the TV on and she's still like, right. And it's just garbage stuff. It was like game shows and stuff with no content. And it was cigarettes too, you know? And wow. So it's just interesting. So I talked to her about that 12th house Ceres and really making more of a spiritual connection, as part of her daily routine, which she's currently not doing, you know, and she felt like that's something she wanted. But with Pisces, it's sort of like, you're either going, I'm sorry, 12th house, similar to Pisces, you're either going to the source, you know, going to the spiritual source to be contained, or you might be checking out because you actually want to be connected to something spiritual and something nourishing, but you might not know how to do that, right? So you're mm-hmm. using drugs or something else to not be fully present.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so that being able to notice like, oh, wow, this is how you learned about caring for yourself and nurturing yourself from your mother. And mm-hmm. then you can really see how, what opportunities you have to shift that, you know, any negative impacts of that in your modern current day life.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So as with everything, there's no kind of doom and gloom element to it, right? If you can be right. more neutral and say just like, oh, this was mom's energy, like how can I incorporate this in a positive way and make it work for me? But it's, I mean, the stories I've heard have been so intense. So it was actually great the other day. I had a client who had a really wonderful relationship to her mom, and I think that was the first person in like 20 readings or something. I was like, this is so refreshing to hear. Your mom was a hoot, and she gave me a beautiful sense of adventure, and it was so neat to see that. But it, typically, this is kind of keyed to mom's shadow stuff, right? It's like mm-hmm. as that young baby, you're just a sponge and you just kind of like pick up everything that's a little bit frayed or harried and are kind of focused on that maybe. So
cool. I love this because, you know, this is something like the mother wound, the womb wound, the wounding that gets passed down through, you know, literally living inside of this person for 9 months and then being raised by them and being at the mercy of their beliefs and their rhythms, I mean, has a very real impact on everybody alive. We all came out of a womb. And so I love how this, you know, there's different ways you can address that. There's like shamanic ceremonies you can do. There's all sorts of healing. Like I think there's any way you want to address it, you can, but I love this way that taking a look at where Ceres is in your chart and how that points to what kind of rhythms your mother has can really elucidate why you do something that you do now that maybe you never thought of, but that has a huge impact on your life and that you could make a more conscious choice around.
Yeah, I really like how you've put that. And it kind of reminds me, like occasionally I get questions of people saying, I'm going to get reborn to my chart or something, or they're, I don't know if you've heard of this, but
no.
People will just find some issue with their natal chart. And so I don't know who's selling this, but I have heard of it before where you can get kind of like reborn. You choose a new day and you do a ceremony and you say like my chart now.
Wow.
And I mean, that's fine if you want to do that, but I do feel like there's such value in just owning who you are and what you've had. And I mean, that's kind of bridges to ancestor work, I'd say, in that, like for myself, I had such a crazy traumatized family that I really rejected everyone. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. And I was ashamed and I called them white trash and I didn't have any nice names for my family. And doing ancestry work has been a whole process in learning how to claim what was good. And even if it was all bad and all fucked up, just to kind of honor that they lived, they did their best, they had some neat experiences, and I can just kind of cherry pick, like, okay, here's some cool stuff about them, right? I'm going to reject, like, the pedophilia or something, but I'm going to, like, pick out the school that they did. And so I see kind of a similar thing with this reading in that it can connect us to that sacred idea of, like, we all came from a mother, and maybe she wasn't a perfect mother, a great mother, but there's something beautiful to reclaim. And to that, you know, what Ceres can also show is where you have a particular affinity with the deity. So that has been a super weird and surprising aspect of these readings, in that just using Ceres by sign and house, I'll ask someone if they have a connection to a particular myth or a goddess or a god or something. And it always fits lockstep with what the planet is doing. So it's kind of interesting to think about that early imprinting of mother, like how big mother is, and then how later that can become the image of the goddess that appeals to you.
Yeah, so cool. I love how you're weaving all this together. So how would someone, I mean, I guess someone listening who's like really feeling it would know, like, oh wow, that might be a sign that they should get a reading with you about this series. Cause I don't know of anyone else who's doing this. Like, you're really pioneering. I mean, you mentioned that, that Demetra George kind of tipped you off to this through her work, but you're really taking this further and adding some flavors to it. So, like, is anyone else doing this right now that you know of?
Not in the way that I'm doing it. So, particularly with that sense of personal deity, I feel like that's something I've kind of happened upon that was unexpected. And I was like, let's just see if this is a coincidence. And I kept checking it out. I'm like, oh no, it's not. I just figured something out. That's cool. So yeah, I'm going to have to write a book. Like, I'm coming around to this idea of, like, I'm going to write this book with my schedule, but I really should, because the material has been so profound to people. And I just got such amazing feedback from someone who had Ceres and Taurus. And, you know, I don't know if this applies to your audience or not, but my experience is certainly that almost all women are in huge anxiety about their weight, their body, their shape. You know, you probably have more enlightened people here, more healed people here, but just, this is the cultural number we get pulled on us, right? Like,
oh yeah.
Oh, women. Okay. Totally. You can vote now, but you also get to spend all of your energy, like, obsessing over how much space you're taking up in the world by focusing on how much you weigh or something. Like, I feel like that's the trade-off. Like, okay, we're, like, technically empowered, but I'm still, like, funneling our energy off into the non-important. And so with her, with Venus and Taurus, I'm like, Venus of Willendorf, right? This really big, earthy, fecund, powerful. You know, do you know what I'm talking about? The large-breasted.
The like, goddess symbol. Right. Like, the, like, very, very large hips, large-breasted, ancient symbol.
Exactly, right. Mm-hmm. So the 30,000-year-old fetish they found in Europe, and the head is de-emphasized and the feet are de-emphasized. It's all about breasts and hips and belly. And so in our reading, I was like, you know, I just want you to get a little ceramic version of this, which is something I had when I was a young feminist, but I'm like, it really kind of helped me shift a lot around my consciousness. And with Taurus, you know, it's about appreciating the earthiness of the body and the fleshiness of the body. And she just got back to me and told me how much that had transformed for her around having shame around being a larger woman, you know, and someone who enjoys eating, God forbid, right? We should actually have joy and connection when we eat. So many women don't, you know. I mean, I had a group of women over at my house discussing this, and I would say, like, only 1 out of 10 could actually talk freely about how much she loved eating, and everyone else was giving an apology, you know, like, well, I'm just skinny like this. I don't try, you know, I just have this metabolism, or, oh yeah, I haven't been able to work out because of my schedule. That's why I'm fat, you know? And so it was so weird. Like, people couldn't even talk about the connection that hopefully we experience when eating without including body shame. Wow. And I was so bummed. I'm like, no, I want to hear about food. Like, I don't want to hear, you know, how sad you are about your body. You know, it's just, I hate how those things are linked.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. And so, you know, this really can help us reclaim that powerfully, reclaim that connection mm-hmm. with the earth and the food and the purpose of food. And as you mentioned earlier, the esoteric purpose of food and really being mm-hmm. held and supported by the earth and allowing our power and energy to flow, not into obsessing over our appearance, but into embodying our true form, our true being.
Don't you think if all women, and I want to say all over the world, but I'll just say the U.S. because sure. I can't speak to everyone in the world. But I mean, just imagine if the women in the U.S. stopped funneling all this energy into being small. Like, it's yeah. just how I see it. It's like, why is everyone trying so hard to be small? And instead just like, what if that energy was gone? And you could actually use it to build things and heal things. And that was a transformation I went through in my own life where I'd had eating disorders and body image dysmorphia. And I did this really powerful constellation drama therapy thing. And it was all about my ancestors. And after that, like, my neuroticism about this was just gone. Like, I was no longer walking around, like, putting all my energy into worrying about whether people thought my butt was big or whether I was, like, pooching out of my clothes or something. Like, I just didn't, I just wasn't putting it there anymore, like, putting energy into anxiety and shame. And my life changed so much because it was like, wow, oh, wow, I have, like, this whole sack of energy that I can use to go kick ass in my life, right, when I'm not using it to
this
be worried.
This whole meat sack.
So what?
I like to call it the meat sack.
Interesting. But do you... But is there some hostility there? You're like, darn meat sack.
A little bit. A little bit. It was highly influenced by psychedelics, but...
Yeah.
But, you know, I think so. You said there about, you know, what if we didn't spend so much energy trying to be small? That's not just physically, but like mentally, emotionally, and spiritually too. I think that that physical manifestation of our obsession with being tiny is just the surface of how we're all, you know, conditioned to just not take up space and to not do, like, not be big, not be bold, not be anything against the grain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. I love that. And this, you know, unlocking those cycles, you know, disrupting those cycles really does start with disrupting how we've inherited these things from our ancestors and most recently from our mother specifically. But, you know, as you said, you did this ancestral, you had this experience of healing that allowed you to help heal these ancestral patterns. And then you weren't obsessing anymore. And like, just looking, I'm just obsessed with this series thing. So like looking at,
really.
So looking at how, you know, your mother, influenced you in your own care and relationship with food and your relationship in worthiness and relationship in your patterns and rhythms. Like, your mother is the living embodiment of all of your ancestors on that side. So yeah, this series is so connected not only to your mother, but to your ancestors, and really does have a lot of potential to help do some deep ancestral work as well, I believe.
Oh, you are so right. And this is a concept that I haven't been able to pull into the readings a lot, just because I only have an hour with people and I'm connecting all these dots very quickly, you know, madly trying to pull everything together. But when you think about what the experience of food was like, say, you know, 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, you are probably living and working and foraging and hunting and growing in the same place where your mother was farming and your grandmother was farming and your great grandmother was farming. And you probably are utilizing recipes and methods of preparation and all that, that were from your mother and your grandmother. And so I might start crying. Oh my gosh. I think there's this way that cooking can actually open us up to that ancestral connection. And for some people, that might be a no-brainer. They might have like an amazing Italian grandmother who like taught them all that stuff. But for me, with my mom, you know, like picking up the Arby's bag, and my mom was also anorexic and bulimic, and so she hated food. I mean, if she had to cook, it was like the amount of contempt that was loaded into that dish that she couldn't eat. Like, it was just, I mean, that's why I like lived on sweets, because the stuff she actually cooked was just sort of like, here's your resentment pie or something. She didn't like it.
Wow.
Her mom also was in a lot of shame and self-hate about her body, and so would just sometimes not feed her kids and instead pick up a bag of candy, and they would kind of like all participate in the disordered eating together by eating a bag of candy for dinner.
Wow.
So for me, this is really kind of reinventing it and having nothing to really pull from, you know, and kind of just imagining like, okay, I have Czech ancestry, I have German ancestry. So when I'm cutting up a kohlrabi, for example, which is very German food, I try to think of my ancestors and the fact that they were doing this 200 years ago or 300 or 400 years ago and make that connection.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. And with it, what you're saying about the, you know, your mother and your grandmother and your grandmother's grandmother living in such deep connection on the same land and cooking the same things that, you know, that's such a beautiful evolution of potentially, I don't know, I haven't studied this, so everyone take this with a grain of salt, but you know, it's potentially such a beautiful evolution of figuring out like what really nurtures your specific bloodline with regards to like these weeds at this time of year are really good for helping you like clear out any old winter gunk, and like this animal at this time of year is like really nourishing and helps you keep going. And we have, you know, all of us, almost all of us here on where we live in the States are not indigenous to this land. Right. And we, our ancestors didn't live on this land. And so how do we reconnect with that? And, you know, like I'm never going to be living back in the Scottish Highlands or in Denmark where my ancestors are from. I don't think, I mean, it's possible, but I really doubt it. So I'm not going to recreate that, but how can working with Ceres and looking in the chart and not only that, but like creating a relationship and doing like altar work and meditative work with Ceres help me go back and receive messages from my ancestors in regards to like how to nourish myself and carry forward in a really healthy way and connect with the land wherever I am?
Oh, I love this question so much. And I hope I can contain my answer because I have so many different answers.
Let it sprawl.
Let it sprawl. I love that. So I know very little about herbalism, but one principle that I've picked up is that the medicine for whatever conditions might flourish in a particular climate, like the medicine will always grow in that climate.
Right.
And so people might be prone to lung ailments in a particular climate. And so those lung herbs will grow, right? And so I think that there's also just an ancient tie between food and medicine that we've lost in the contemporary world. And so even 200 or 300 years ago, like people had the sense that medicine came out of the earth, right? Because we only have pharmaceuticals being about 100 years old-ish. So as far as making that connection, now that we're all so mobile, right? Most of us don't live in the place where our ancestors lived anymore. I think that's part of the reason that Ceres has spoken to me and that, you know, she's kind of been really up in the culture because there was a NASA mission to photograph Ceres recently, right? So we were hearing a lot about Ceres. And so this is kind of another idea that relates to the astrological philosophy. So a planet comes into consciousness at a really pivotal time. So it's so crazy with this planet because it came into consciousness as far as being discovered in 1801, and then it got buried It's really weird to me. It's like, why don't we just forget? Like, why don't we just forget that this planet was discovered 200 years ago? So I am trying to answer your question, but
oh,
I think talking, you know, like specifically with your audience, let's say, is we see these pockets of people who are starting to say, this is the most important thing in the world right now, right? Like, we need to grow our own food. When I think about future and what people should do, like, what's the most important thing you should do? It's like, okay, start a seed bank. Learn how to grow your own food. Like, the more we take this power back into our hands and start reconnecting to this relationship that's been lost. You know, I'm a terrible gardener just because I'm like connected more to this information doesn't mean I've realized it yet as far as perfecting that connection.
And growing food is more than just being the person there on the ground, like scraping at the earth. It's like there's so many different parts to it, too. So we're kind of rediscovering what those different parts are.
Yeah. And so I think the more people that wake up to it, we can start rediscovering the native plants. We can start rediscovering the native medicines. We can get into harmony with that, right? But at this point, it feels transitional. It's like some people are really understanding how important and relevant that is. Mm-hmm. And other people are just, you know, still eating the plastic food for every
Right. It's not a totally conscious thing, kind of like, you know, like maybe, you know, people still smoke. But everyone now knows at least that like smoking is not good for your health.
Right. No, that's a really good point. Yeah. And I mean, part of me even is like, right, but then there's connecting with the spirit of tobacco.
Right, I know.
Cool. I have empathy for because I used to smoke. And so I'm like, I'm kind of holding out possibility for that. Like, what about doing it in a sacred way?
Right.
You know, and that's an interesting just tangent too, because I was reading about tobacco and it's very much a cultivated plant, right? The way that native peoples used it a couple hundred years ago, it was very different than the modern cigarette, which is like not connecting to plant spirit at all, obviously.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Mom probably had some addictions that they cast on. Look at their series charts.
So I think some people are kind of hearing the message and they might not even know that it's connected to a planet. You know, that's the cool thing about astrology. It works whether or not you know about it.
That's
right.
Cool.
So, mm-hmm.
Or whether you believe in it or not.
Yeah. And that's what's so cool. And that's what's always kind of confusing to me. When people come to me and ask me if they're on the right path, because I'm like, well, your intuition will be telling you. It's not like the stars are going to say something totally polarized against what you intuitively already feel unfolding in your life, you know?
So with I'm thinking like, okay, we should probably wrap it up here because I know you have to go. And...
Oh, no, I have another 15 minutes.
Okay,
easily, so.
Cool. Yeah. Just want to make sure we're not going over for you because you got to go get your son because you're a mama too, handing over some mom stuff to your son.
My little sprout, yeah. His Sirius, by the way, is in this crazy position. So I'm just like, I'm going to just pretend I don't see that.
A little bit nuts. Yeah. We'll deal with that when he's older.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. Maybe a good kind of cherry on top with this Sirius conversation is, as a mother, or someone who plays a mother role in someone's life, because not everyone has their birth mother as a mother, and not everyone is a birth mother. Right. How does knowing where your children's series is placed in their chart influence or affect you? I mean, is it just like too personal to really get it? Or has it showed you some ways that you can perhaps help some of the higher expressions of this placement unfold for your son?
Question. Yeah, I like that. Well, okay, so for some of these questions, my son is really too young to tell because he's 3.5.
Right.
And he has Sirius and Scorpio, which is kind of a nail biter for me, because oftentimes like that shows up when someone has intense food allergies.
Oh, wow.
And so I guess because I'm so experienced with this, like I know that just because someone has a challenging configuration, it doesn't always result in blank.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm not going to obsess over it, but I'm also kind of leaving open the window of possibility. Like, okay, this could get really intense.
You can watch for signs of it. If something weird's happening, you're like, oh, this might actually be a really weird allergy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and you know, this is where people have life and death situations with food, right? Because Scorpio rules over death and trauma, and you know, it could be very intense. And because I've only had one child and I don't really have anything to compare it to, he has Ceres on the ascendant. So he has it in a really prominent place. Like if I was looking for a test case of this planet, I picked a great kid for that, right? So, so he is extremely tied to rhythms. And, but you know, all kids are, so that's the thing. It's like, okay, all kids of this age really need to have consistency and they really thrive with that. But he has an especially difficult time with transitions, you know? So we'll see.
Too soon to tell.
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't think she'll mind me sharing this, but I have a client called Kate Becker, and she's got this wonderful perfume company called Kate's Magic. And she has Sun conjunct Ceres, and she has a store called Ritual. So she's got a company called Kate's Magic, but her store is called Ritual. And that's like what I think this energy is really about. And so kind of coming back to food and bridging it to that, your food and how you consume it, it should be a daily ritual, right? It shouldn't just be shoving it into your face for sustenance while you watch TV or like work on your computer or something. Like that's not a ritual. That's not going to connect you to the earth. So just kind of taking that time to make it sacred, I think could open up a lot of this connection for people.
Wow. And so for folks listening, they can, you know, whether or not they go and look into where Ceres is in their chart, what would you recommend if they just want to start cultivating more of a relationship with Ceres and just kind of intuitively unpack some of that for a little while and see how that feels? Like what kind of, you know, there's the one of them is very clearly, obviously taking time to at least one meal a day, as you mentioned earlier, connect with your food as having come from the earth and as having nurturing you from the earth. Is there anything else there that you would recommend people could do to cultivate that relationship with Ceres?
Oh, I love that. Well, maybe just to give kind of a preview of what the readings are about, you know, Ceres through the signs will often give me a direction of how I advise people. And you can probably find that out on astro.com. I know people find it out before they come to me. So I'm cool. Assuming astro.com will show you, or there's probably other online programs. But one thing I've recommended to people, and this is for people who have a lot of anxiety or hostility around food. Like some people are so disordered in their eating that they really just hate food or hate eating. It's like this constant upset to them. So to try to connect to one food that you really like and don't have any negative feelings about, and just really get to know it and understand it and try to honor the spirit of that food. And to allow that to teach you something. So I know I've mentioned to you like being in connection with plants, but I also think this could apply to the spirit of animals and animal products as well, which maybe not everyone agrees with, but, you know, I love tuna. So I have to kind of think about that and honor that connection. Like it's one of my favorite foods, you know? So it's good for me to be in appreciation of the gifts that I get from consuming that food. So that's a way to start. And then I think also making the ancestral connection, even if you don't know what you're doing, right? Even if you're just guessing, like, okay, I think, you know, my great grandmother probably cut up an onion in her life, right? And so just trying to open up that connection to lineage. So that's another thing that Virgo in the sixth house rules over, lineage, which, you know, we get from our family. And just ask. I found that to be really effective. I'll just ask my ancestors to show up. But you have to give them that space. That's the thing, right? You have to show up too. So see if they inspire you with a recipe or a method or a dish.
Very cool. Thank you. Thank you for that. And so you offer more than just series readings, even though the series reading is awesome and amazing. So what are some things you offer and where can people find you?
Okay. So I'm at theplutobabe.com.
I love your blog, by the way.
Thank you. So let's see. One of the things I thought we might talk about, although I didn't really mention it, was I do past life readings. And so that's where I spent a lot of my energy and focus. And of course, it informs a lot of the perspective I take, which is that all these seemingly negative things that happen are actually things that we want to learn for our evolution. So that reading, which is a natal reading plus past life analysis, that's called The Evolution. And then I do a reading called Fore and Aft, which is kind of a look ahead, you know, look ahead to the next year or two. And I call it Fore and Aft because a lot of times people are still dealing with all the fallout from something that just happened. Hmm. So I'll look like 6 months behind. Like, what have you just come out of? And how do you move through that? And then the other readings have just been born out of what people ask me a lot. So I get a lot of questions about love and relationships. And so I do a love focus. I do a career focus. And I do one called New Hope for Old Wounds. And that's interesting. So getting people to look at difficult situations they've lived through and unpacking it through the astrology. And so it allows them to take more ownership of an event that might have been really devastating, like the death of someone or breakup of a relationship, and kind of understand what existential opportunity the planets were holding out to them.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Through that difficult event. Cool. Yeah.
Cool. Are there more? I don't want to cut you off, but.
I do couples readings, which I like doing, but those are definitely the most labor intensive readings that I have. So I don't always bring them up because they're expensive. You know, I'm like, they're really cool and fun and valuable, but I'm working with so many charts at that point because it's like your chart, your boyfriend's chart, the composite chart, and da da da. So it's super involved.
The charts chart.
Yeah, it's a lot of information for sure. So it's kind of like I've got, you know, 10 hours worth of material, and then I have to figure out how to boil it down into 2 hours.
Wow.
And so, which is kind of like every reading, but it's just more so in that one.
Yeah, wow. Cool. Awesome. And that's at theplutobabe.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. The Pluto Babe. We've been talking with the Pluto Babe, everyone.
well, and that. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say thanks for orbiting into our world for a little bit.
You're so cute. Yeah, the Pluto Babe was something another astrologer pointed out that I used that phrase a lot and that I actually was one. I was kind of resistant at first. I'm like, no, I'll never market myself as that dark. And then I realized like I just wind up talking to people about heavy traumatic stuff. And those are people who seem to find me and really appreciate my approach. So I'm like, okay, I'm the Pluto Babe. I will own it. I will own my Scorpio North Node. So there you go.
And that's why we love what you do.
Thank you.
Awesome. So we'll link to the Pluto Babe in the show notes so people can go check you out and check out those readings. And there's so much good stuff about series in here. I hope people will maybe listen twice to that part at least and really listen between the lines for like what is speaking to them about this, because this is something that is emerging now and that you're really helping translate into, you know, human communication for us to all receive. But this is really exciting, and I feel like maybe we'll be catching up in the future to see what else has unfolded, because I know there's more coming for you for this knowledge that's just coming to you in your relationship with Ceres. So thank you so much for coming over here today and sharing with us.
Thank you. And thank you for giving space to this ancient goddess to influence us today and help heal us. And I would say, you know, this reading, definitely the Ceres reading, it's about half astrology and half the sort of embodied goddess ancestral perspective about how we can heal the earth. So I'm really excited to be part of that awakening. And I see you as so much a part of this movement, right? Like just getting people back into their bodies and connected to the earth and just becoming conscious of the fact that this is something we have to pay attention to, right? It's imperative that we all start checking in that way. So thank you. I'm so honored to have been here. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Thank you all so much for listening. If this show was inspiring and nourishing for you, please, as always, share it with a friend. And if you haven't already, go give us a review on iTunes or whatever podcast app you're listening through. You don't even have to write anything. You can just click 5 stars or whatever stars you really feel. I got some 1 stars, gonna be honest. Whatever you want to review, review it if that's what you want. But if you want to give me some love and give me some 5 stars, I will take it. And make sure you sign up for the weekly freebies over at dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret. That's dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret for weekly freebies like tarot spreads and book excerpts and rituals and spells and stuff like that. So I will see you there. dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret.